Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. Obviously, the Thanksgiving holiday is forcing us to tweak our schedule a little bit, which we are doing. And it's a lot of fun to get cranking, start the dialogue early in the week. So we're taping this on Tuesday, November 26th. Travis out sick, but he'll be doing some work from home. Taylor in the hot seat. Welcome, Taylor. He's nodding. He does. Taylor, you can talk. You're loud.
Oh, wow. This is a new thing for me. I'm generally not allowed to speak. So
a new hire, huh? You've been here at ESPN a month?
Yeah, two months now. I work on the college football podcast with Herbie and Pollock and courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.
Oh, come on. You got the big names, big cheese.
I know.
Fast track.
I can't believe they did this to me.
Yeah, those guys don't even acknowledge me, so you're fine. I've been here seven plus years. But good to have you. Thanks for stepping in. I know we're taping two podcasts today, so appreciate all the juggling with the schedule and our guests as well. Coming up, Mr. Executive Director John Murray is going to give us some plays. And obviously, we have Maction tonight. We've already seen some move with Western Michigan up to -9, was 7 yesterday. And then we have the Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving, Friday, a slew of games Saturday as well. So we're going to get Murray's plays. He's got a few to pass along. And also, Brad Edwards is going to join us. Nothing against any of the other handicappers we've had. Paul Stone was great back-to-back weeks. ER. A lot of people are jammed up this week. Brad, obviously, so knowledgeable about college football. He came to us at the beginning of the season, gave out, I believe he's going to sweep the board with all his season win totals. He's a guy I know from, obviously, working on TV and Daily Wager, but really our time together goes back to College Game Day on ESPN Radio. Just a fantastic dude, really knows his college football. So we're going to ask him about the Iron Bowl and some of the other rivalry games and have some fun as well. But first, the director of Mr. Executive Director, let's get to it.
Kicking is for losers.
Now time to bring in a man we're very thankful for, John Murray, Mr. Executive Director. And, sir, good to have you on the pod, as always. I know we're doing an NFL one as well before you hit the road. But it's that home stretch of the season where I usually kind of take the foot off the gas. I really only like one or two games this week. I'm curious what kind of action you have from behind the counter.
You're talking about college football, you only like one or two games?
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we got some pretty good stuff on college, actually. We've got, you know, it's still very early in the week, being Tuesday morning here in Las Vegas, so the NFL handles a little bit light, but I got quite a few talking points on the college football card this week. Great, another great weekend of college football coming up, and hopefully we did okay this past Saturday, not great, but hopefully we can close the college football regular season here with a big week.
All right, well, that's interesting because, of course, I'm going to have, like, the puns of, like, let's stuff our wallets this Thanksgiving, not just our faces.
Well, of course, you can't avoid that.
Yeah, we've got to give us stuff to be grateful for. You know, there's a lot to get into. For me, look, I'm sure I'll find a few more plays between now and the end of the weekend, but I'm all for hearing what's going on behind the counter. Because baby needs a new pair of shoes. Let's go.
You want to start with Thanksgiving Day? Because we do have a little money coming in on that Egg Bowl game between Ole Miss and Mississippi State.
I like the dog. What do you got coming in?
Good, because we saw a guy I respect. He took three with the dog, Ole Miss. We're down to Mississippi State -2.5 here. Mississippi State, terrible season for them. Coach looks like he's in over his head. I mean, really, both the Mississippi schools and the SEC are down this year, but we saw a little bit of money come in on the dog here. They took +3 with the Rebels.
Yeah, I just think they're the better team and the quarterback, and they're more dynamic, and Mississippi State's just been a train wreck offensively in a lot of times.
Oh, there's no doubt.
There's been times where they've been fine, you know, obviously, but just so limited, so...
Yeah, that really down year for Mississippi State, and it's so competitive in that SEC West. There's just nowhere to go in that division, and their team has just sunk to the bottom. It's hard to believe. I mean, just a few years ago, they were the number one ranked team in the country. If you remember that team with Dan Mullen, obviously Dak Prescott was the quarterback. They look like they were a team that might get to the college football playoff that year.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously things have changed.
The mighty have fallen. Oh yeah, it's a very different now in Starkville.
Well, you might remember, Murray, Egg Bowl was one of my favorite plays last year. We talked about it a lot on the pod. I texted the SportsCenter producer. I'm like, you got to get me on the show. I got to give out this pick on Thursday. I want to up my record. And I got in there, and sure enough, they covered. Weird game, though. I mean, look, I wouldn't say you guys strictly power ratings with these rivalry games. Do you adjust at all?
Well, there's a we can get into it a little bit later in the show, but there's always little variables you're looking at, like, for instance, the Iowa-Nebraska game. Nebraska needs to win to get bowl eligible. That's the kind of thing.
Right.
You certainly look at stuff like that. Who needs to win these games? Who's more motivated? And I got a game later on in the rundown that's not a rivalry game, but a game on Saturday where we really question one of the two teams' motivation.
Ooh, that's a tease, a professional tease.
I'm getting good at this radio stuff, man.
Yeah. You're natural. You're a natural, Murray. Okay, so you got the sharp. One of the sharp plays is Ole Miss plus the three.
Yes, sir.
And then you've moved down to 2.5. What else you got?
Here's one for Friday. Actually, I got two on Friday. We'll start with this one. They laid 2.5 with Ball State. Mm. Pushed us up to -3. They're at home against Miami of Ohio. You know, I had the privilege of having lunch with Chris the Bear Felica on Sunday.
Ooh.
He told me he thinks the MAC is so down this year that you should fade all the MAC teams in bowl season. You can't do that when they're playing each other in conference play. This group, they laid 2.5 with Ball State, and now they're -3.
The Bear making a Vegas trip midseason. Solid.
Solid. Good to see the Bear. The Bear is great, man.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Salt of the earth and very wise in the in many sports, including college football. So you laid the 2.5 with Ball State. Yeah, I'm not a believer in Miami of Ohio, which I believe, memory serves me right, was struggling last week with Akron, right? Like, barely got by the Zips?
Yeah, they did. And, yeah, certainly this is a down year for the MAC. I know we all enjoy the MAC-tion Tuesday and Wednesday nights, but the conference just isn't quite up to par this season.
Speaking of which, you got some steam on Western Michigan tonight, right? It was 7, moved to, it's now 9 and 8.5.
Yeah, that's true. We it wasn't any bets here at the Superbook, but that's correct. The market has moved up from 7 to 9. We've just been kind of following the market on that game. Nothing to really report from behind the counter, at least here at our book.
Okay, so Friday's Ball State game will get lost in the shuffle because it is not isolated like the Tuesday-Wednesday action is. What else?
Here's another one Friday. They laid 12 with Boise State. You know, Boise State's on the road. They're at Colorado State. Boise now is 13.5-point favorite in this game.
Ooh, how do you feel about it? So where's the sharp play? I'm sorry?
They laid 12 with Boise, State.
Okay.
And now Boise State is a 13.5-point favorite.
Interesting. Yeah, Boise's been opening up a can on some teams.
No, they have. And Colorado State really down this year. Mike Bobo, we'll call it questionable decision-making on Friday against Wyoming, kicking field goals in ridiculous places. I don't know how much longer he's really going to. Well, you know, they were down 14-7 in the fourth quarter. They had a 4th and 2, and he kicked like a 50-yard field goal, and of course the kid missed. I don't know what I don't even know what the field goal there does for you. Very questionable decision.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty strange.
The other game, we've had good two-way action on this one. We had a group lay 2.5 with Virginia Tech, and another group took 3 with Virginia. We're at 3 right now, Virginia Tech -3 in Charlottesville. That game's Friday morning. Winner will play Clemson in the ACC championship game. That's a rivalry, big rivalry in the state of Virginia where I'll be this week. I went to this game, I think, 4 years ago in Charlottesville. It's a pretty fun time.
What's the name of this rivalry?
But, I don't know. A Commonwealth Cup, maybe? I think it's the Commonwealth Cup. I really only know all the Big Ten ones because they all have funny names. But I think it's called the Commonwealth Cup.
What is your favorite rivalry nickname?
The Old Brass Spittoon, I think, is my favorite one. But there's so many good ones, man.
It's such a Murray move to like that one.
Why? You don't like that one? That's Michigan State, Indiana, right? Old Brass Spittoon?
Mine's the Holy War. I know
that's a good one.
That was the beginning of the season. But just direct. And good old-fashioned hate's pretty good, too.
I mean, the Iron Bowl is probably the best one, if we're being serious.
Nah, come on. Holy War.
You like the Holy War better?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they're all pretty good. I mean, college football, I'm kind of sad that college football is ending, man.
I know what you mean. I go through it because I'm pretty fried. I'm not going to lie. Split off days, 2 podcasts a week, the show, you know, writing picks for the – I mean, look, it takes its toll. I mean, I'm not complaining about my job overall, but I'm not disappointed with the end of the workload to regulate my schedule a little bit, but I am going to miss college football.
I'm going to miss college football the NFL ending is okay with me. But you want to go to some of these Saturday games?
Keep firing.
Here's a good one. So here's a team that's really playing well right now, all kidding aside. Tennessee is playing really well at the moment. We had a group lay 20.5 with the Vols, then 21 with the Vols. They're all the way up to a 22.5-point favorite. They're at home against Vanderbilt.
Why the
they're playing good? You know, they're playing good right now. Tennessee, a team we kind of knocked early in the season, but they've turned the corner, it looks like.
Yeah, I got off them last week. Disappointed there that I did. And
really bad year for Missouri. Missouri's a team come in well below expectations this season.
Yeah, they're not good. And
no,
I really wish I took Tennessee last week. So what's the play here? I'm sorry, I'm not really.
Tennessee minus 20.5 and 21. Oh, and now the line is 22.5. I know. And, you know, Vanderbilt, obviously, they've had the wheels come off this year. And Tennessee is just peaking at the right time. And I think if they win this game, they get a bowl. I believe I read that this weekend. If Tennessee wins this game, they get a bowl game.
That sounds right. Let me just double check. You are one win, two wins, and then four in a row. So they're already there.
Oh, they're already there. Okay, yeah. Well, still.
And you're allowed one FCS win, right?
Yeah, I think if you win twice, you need more than six wins.
Tennessee,
or something
Chattanooga,
like that.
And then they beat Mississippi State, and now they've won four straight.
Mm-hmm.
And they've covered six straight. I love it.
Yeah, they've really been playing some pretty good ball. Speaking of a team that always plays good ball, saw a group lay 26 on the road with Clemson. They're at South Carolina. That number's now 27. Clemson they're a machine, man. I still think they're the best team in the country. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree with you. After seeing LSU's defense, let's not forget, LSU got lit up by Texas offense, and we've seen what's happened with that Texas offense at times since, obviously Baylor. And then Ohio State they play with fire a little bit, and the Tigers kind of peaking, like you said, covered 5 of 6. So I can see this being a beatdown. I definitely can.
Yeah. I mean, you expect pretty much every Clemson game to be a beatdown at this point, right?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I haven't gotten off that train yet either.
Here's one. I got two more that are both late-night games, and then I thought maybe we could discuss some of the more premier games on Saturday. Sharp guy took 3 points with San Jose State. They're at home. They're playing Fresno State. So he took San Jose State +3. They're now +2.5. Fresno State's a team that's really been struggling here down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lead at halftime against Hawaii, blew it. And then, yeah, they're a tough team. San Jose State's pretty good.
Yeah, they are pretty good.
Here's the one that the Mac here, you know, or except not the Mac, Mount West.
Let me give you the one I teased earlier, and then we can get into the bigger games.
Okay. Yeah, I'm
so,
all ears now.
Army's playing at Hawaii on Saturday, and the question that we have is how focused is Hawaii going to be on figuring out how to stop this Army offense when they know they've got the Mountain West Championship game looming next Saturday at Boise State. How focused are they really going to be on this Army game?
Not at all.
They've got the Mountain West Championship game next week, and Army plays such a unique style of football that you really have to prepare for. We saw a wise guy take 3 points with Army. We like Army because we think Hawaii is going to be looking ahead to the Mountain West Championship game next Saturday in Boise.
Opened 3.5, didn't it?
Opened 3 here. I'm sorry, you're right. It was 3.5 at the very beginning. You're correct. Yeah. Opened 3.5. The guy that we respect did take 3, but we're down to 2.5 now on Army.
Yeah, that's a good play. That might make the column. I like that play.
Well, it's kind of an angle play, and it's hard to imagine, you know, with Hawaii, that's such a big deal for them to be in the Mountain West Championship game.
Oh, sure.
They know they've got it coming next week. Now, there's always the question of Army's motivation going to Hawaii when they've got their big game coming up 2 weeks later. Obviously, they play Navy on December 14th. We'll see. I got faith in the servicemen, though. They'll be focused on this game.
Yeah, they can't be susceptible to look ahead spots. They're
never
machines.
No way.
I will. Absolutely. I wonder how good they are to handle. I mean, Hawaii can sling it around, man. They got some wideouts who can who can like Bird is tough to track down in that open space out there.
Oh, very good year for Hawaii this season. It says a lot that they're in the conference championship game.
All right, that's good. So is that your last play?
That's the last play of the stuff I would classify as sharp. I don't know if you wanted to get into some of these, the bigger. I mean, obviously, you've got the Iron Bowl. You've got the
right,
Ohio State Michigan game.
So that was going to start with the Iron Bowl. So Alabama, Auburn moved from the look ahead line was 2.5, moved to 4 based on what?
Well, I think it's just the narrative out there is that Alabama has to blow out Auburn. And that's what everyone's saying is Alabama has to blow these guys out if they want to have any chance of getting into the college football playoff. But I actually lean to Auburn in this spot.
Me too.
You know, the really big difference between this game and the Auburn-Georgia game a couple of weeks ago is Georgia is really good defensively, and Alabama just isn't this year. They just don't have a very good defense. I think you might be better off waiting a little bit, though. All the money's coming in on Alabama, and I think it probably will as we get closer to the weekend. So unless a really sharp group comes in on Auburn, and that's possible, it's only Tuesday morning here, but unless that happens, I think this number might actually go up, and Auburn potentially a good dog play here on Saturday.
Man, I'm stunned at this. Like, I thought I would have laid last week, we were talking about in the show, like minus $3 on Bama not to make the playoff. Now, Oregon's loss shakes things up, but
yeah.
I just don't see how you can make a case for Alabama, even if they win this game. I mean, if they win by like 30, then maybe. But I just don't understand, without Tua, how you can tell me they're one of the four best teams when they really have no impressive wins. They have, obviously, some sweet wide receivers. Their defense is leaky, all things considered. And they're not going to be unequivocally better than conference champions. I just don't see it. Now, that means Utah has to win.
Sure. I mean, I think, look, if Georgia beats LSU, Georgia's going to the college football playoff. So the question becomes, if Georgia loses to LSU, who gets in? My vote would be for Utah. If Utah wins out and they win the Pac-12 title game, I think so. If Georgia loses to LSU, I would put Utah in there.
What would you make Utah and Bama line on a neutral?
I mean, Bama would probably be a pretty big favorite, but I think it's less than a touchdown. I think it's less than people think it is. I'll tell you that much. I mean, Utah is such a physical team right now. I don't know. I think Utah would beat Oklahoma.
I
tell you the truth.
And
Oklahoma,
I know. I think you have to favor Bama, but I think Utah would be. Now, I've been not just drinking the Utah Kool-Aid. I'm chugging it. They've covered 7 straight. I've been on them. I was on them last weekend as my best bet. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be on them this weekend. Now, there's a little bit of a tax there. What do you make of that line, 28.5 with Colorado?
Well, I think it is taxed a little bit because Utah has just been steamrolling everybody. But I think Utah's a team, their power rating has gone just through the roof recently. And I just, at this point, I think against Oklahoma, it'd be close to a pick 'em. Maybe a small dog, and I think Alabama, maybe they'd be like a 3 to 3.5 point dog. Utah is a team, they're a lot better than people realize they are, and they are just pummeling everybody right now. They're going to be a decent-sized favorite against Oregon in the Pac-12 title game, and I fully expect them to win that game, and I think they should be into the college football playoff unless Georgia beats LSU, like I said.
Yeah, and let's not, and you kind of alluded to Oklahoma, let's not forget about the Big 12 either.
Yeah, I just think this is such a down year for the Big 12. Oklahoma would be favored against Utah. I understand that. I'm just not so sure that they should be. That's all.
Yeah, because you have to factor in the market, right? You have to factor in the market perception.
Yeah. No, they would be favored. I just don't know. Oklahoma just seems every week to just escape by, you know, skin of their teeth. They're not. This is not a great Oklahoma team, and this is a very down year in the Big 12.
How about your boy Michigan, your boy Harbaugh?
Yeah, so this game, I'm a little surprised at how much this game has been adjusted from the look-ahead number. You know, our look-ahead number was like 13.5 on the Buckeyes here. Right now we've got Ohio State -9. That's up from -8.5. You know, if you watch the Ohio State-Penn State game on Saturday, the final score was a little bit misleading. Justin Fields fumbled going into the end zone in the first half. They fumbled 2 more times in the second half. If they hadn't put the ball on the ground so many times, they would have beat Penn State by 4 or 5 touchdowns.
Oh, I'm aware. I'm very frustrated. I had one producer's like, well, you know, 18's a big number. I'm like, F off. You know, like, they dominated
that's your
the
producer?
Box score.
Wow.
They dominated the box score, and it was really frustrating.
They did. The only thing is, I will say, Michigan, basically since whatever the hell they said at halftime in Happy Valley against Penn State, they remember they dominated the second half of that game. They were just behind by too much. They lose that game. They crush Notre Dame the following week. Michigan is playing great right now. But I do think that Ohio State-Penn State final score is a little bit misleading. Ohio State, I would put Clemson a little bit above Ohio State personally, but Ohio State and Clemson are just head and shoulders above the rest of the country right now, in my opinion.
I'm a little skeptical of Ohio State being that amazing.
Pretty good.
They're obviously awesome. I think they should be in the playoff regardless of losing to Michigan or winning, as long as they win the next game.
Yeah, as long as they win the Big Ten championship game, which they're already in, right? I mean, I think Michigan has two Big Ten losses. So I think no matter what, Ohio State plays the winner of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Ohio State, if they win that game, they'll get into the college football playoff no matter what.
I know what you mean by the adjustment because the box score they dominated. That is interesting. That's a good point. Any other Arizona State? You got the classic flat spot for the Sun Devils here. Arizona, though, is pretty weak. That's an interesting game.
Yeah, we've got Arizona State minus 13.5. Great win for them on Saturday, beating Oregon and Tempe. Nothing to really report here in terms of betting. There's a little bit of money on the favorite, but nothing that I would really call noteworthy. The other big game, though, I'd have to say Wisconsin-Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Wisconsin-Minnesota, excuse me. Wisconsin, a 2.5-point favorite on the road at Minnesota. Winner of that game goes to the Big Ten Championship game to play Ohio State. That's the game that College Game Day is going to be at, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, they're checking off Minnesota from their from the list, so that's kind of cool.
But Saturday's going to be awesome, man. Some really good games. You also got A&M, LSU. LSU, a 17-point favorite. Joe Burrow putting a bow on the Heisman Trophy. And LSU's got Georgia coming up the next week for the SEC title.
Are we forgetting about the fact that LSU could lose?
To A&M? I mean, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
A&M's a team that's played as hard of a schedule as you could ever have in college football, and they're probably a little better than people realize.
That's kind of where I was going with this.
I don't think it's impossible. I certainly would think LSU would be able to handle the business, but LSU's defense is not great. So when you have a kind of a leaky defense, you're always capable of being upset.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, my man. Think that okay. Like I was thinking Georgia could get upset last week. It was close. It was close. And I'm worried.
Georgia's so much better defensively than LSU, though.
That should be a game, obviously.
That'll be a fun one. That's going to be a fun one. Georgia, LSU, and Atlanta next Saturday. That should be a really fun game. I think LSU is a small favorite there, but less than 3.
Right. All right, my man. That should do it for us here. You have yourself some safe travels.
Thank you, sir. And I'll be in touch all weekend, obviously. And hopefully Ole Miss comes through for us on Thanksgiving so we don't have to watch the NFL games.
Start the weekend off right. Let the let the bat signals come when you have them.
Of course.
Nerd alert!
Ah, yes, he's back for more. Brad Edwards, my former co-host and College Game Day on ESPN Radio. Man, I miss talking to and traveling with on Saturdays, but I do get to pick his brain throughout the work week in the newsroom and also on Daily Wager. How are you?
I'm great. I love being summoned by the Nerd Alert.
The mating call.
Yeah. There you go. I'm coming.
We've talked about this with both you and Mike Clay. It's a positive connotation.
Okay. I can deal with it.
Well, we like to pick your brain, as Trevor says, your massive brain. And Brad, I've used your line quite a bit on Twitter. The one you taught me to use. It started with a Jason Garrett field goal on Sunday. Some guy's trying to argue. I said, I can only explain it to you. I can't understand it for you.
Exactly. And that, yeah.
It's just
brilliant. Just about every week that would come up with Trevor, wouldn't
it? Yeah, I have a smart-ass brother who just likes this. Those are kind of things right up his alley.
Those often come up when it's
enjoyed it.
Yeah, when it's dealing with analytical decisions in football. Like, why do you go for it on fourth and whatever? Why do you go for two in this situation? And ultimately, you just kind of run into that brick wall, and that's all you can say is, look, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you.
It's so good. All right, my man. Well, I wanted to get you on because these SEC rivalry games always kind of pique my interest. Obviously, you know all about college football, but you dabble in terms of forteing in the space of the SEC. So let's just run through some of the high-profile games. And I don't want to go chronological order. We'll get to the Egg Bowl. But I want to start Alabama-Auburn.
All right.
I've been talking like this Alabama team really should not be even in the discussion for the college football playoff unless chaos ensues. And we talk about it a lot in terms of the unequivocally better. I just don't think they are remotely as good of a team without Tua. Now, that's master of the obvious because he was a Heisman finalist last year, was going to be a likely one this year. But I think people are like not realizing that because they're discussing Alabama has like a good chance because we saw it 2 years ago. As you very well know, every year is different. Last year it made sense, or excuse me, 2 years ago it made sense. This year it makes zero sense.
It all comes down to how much worse are they offensively. They're obviously lesser without Tua. Maybe worse is the wrong word to use. We'll see. They might look worse on Saturday.
Right.
I've got a funny feeling about that. But if they look like they look, this is still a really good offense. Maybe it's not, you know, top two or three nationally without Tua, but it's still a top 10 offense. If you come away from the Iron Bowl thinking that way, then maybe you could legitimize putting Alabama in. But until we have seen that against a really good defense, and they'll have their chance on Saturday, then I have a hard time going there.
I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, so if you look at the point spread and you try to ask the question, okay, how much is it affected by Tua's absence? It appears to me around a touchdown, 6 or 7 points. Because I'm just guessing with Tua, Alabama will be somewhere around 10.
Well, we knew it earlier in the season, the look-ahead line, but so many other things change.
Right.
Auburn's performance changes that. Yep. It's not just one thing being Tua's injury.
And so I know our metrics, you know, we look at some things like points above average, points above replacement, and those say the same thing, which is that Tua is worth about a touchdown more per game than Mac Jones. But my eyes tell me different. You know, my eyes tell me that it's at least two touchdowns more that Tua's worth.
I agree.
Because I've seen him do it in big. I've also seen him not do it in big games. Then maybe that
Georgia
is something that we're underselling too. Is that Tua has not been the greatest in spots like this against really good defenses, and maybe that's why we might be overvaluing him. But I think with Mac Jones, there are two things that are going to be so many levels above anything that he's previously had to deal with. One is the crowd. I mean, he has had in his career, his two starts have been at home. He had, when he came off the bench, when Tua got hurt the first time, that was against Tennessee in Tuscaloosa. The only time he really had to play any extensive amount in a road game was the last injury to Tua, which Alabama was already up 35-0 when that happened. So the crowd was completely out of the game. Never had to deal with the crowd, and obviously for a game like this at Auburn, I mean, it's going to be unbelievable, the atmosphere. I mean, I guess it would be better if Auburn were playing for something other than to ruin it for Alabama, but for Auburn fans,
well, they're also,
that's a significant amount.
And like, they're playing for the Iron Bowl, too.
Right, but that's what
so
I'm saying.
It's twofold.
It's
not
rivalry,
just the incentive to ruin it. But it's also that they want to win the huge rivalry.
But I think for the Auburn players, that's what it's about, beating Alabama. For the Auburn fans, it's about being the team responsible for making Alabama miss the playoff for the first time.
Okay.
Like they would love that. So anyway, the crowd's going to be hyped. The other thing is Auburn's defense. They are really, really good. I would consider them probably the third best defense in the country. They're definitely top five. Mac Jones has never seen
behind
a defense.
Behind Clemson in Ohio State?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mac Jones has never seen a defense close to what Auburn
They almost
is.
Lost the Tennessee game. Now, he was put in the middle of the game, or not middle, but early. But
second quarter. Early second quarter.
Inserted in the game, that's my point. He didn't have a week of practice with the ones. He was lost. That roughing the passer call when he pushed him to get up on third down, they were turning it over. It was a punt. Punt was coming. It was third down, incomplete. And it was a bogus, I thought, bogus unsportsmanlike conduct or whatever it was. And then extended the drive. And then the fumble in the end zone, obviously, by Tennessee on the goal line that the audibled. Like,
look,
that game was on the ropes.
You could say, to be fair, that he had to come into two games where he wasn't prepared as the starter. They had not built a game plan around his skill set, if that's another way to say it. And both of those games, Tennessee, Mississippi State, they basically did nothing offensively after he came in. It just slammed the brakes on the offense. The other side of that, though, if we're going to be fair to Mac Jones in that way, we also have to admit he has never had a competent defense given a week or more to prepare for him, right? Because the only two games he started were against Arkansas and Western Carolina. I mean, they were so overmatched physically, it didn't really matter how much time they had to prepare. Kevin Steele, the Auburn defensive coordinator, knows that he's facing a quarterback who has not seen very much. As much as we want to talk about Bo Nix being a true freshman, he is by far the more experienced quarterback in this game. Mac Jones has not seen competent defenses try to do things to confuse him, give him different looks. He hasn't had to throw under pressure very often in his career. So all these things put together, I get how much talent he has around him. If he can get the ball in the hands of those guys with a chance to make plays, they probably will. But against this defense in that stadium, I don't see Mac Jones playing very well, and I really don't see how Alabama wins this game unless Bo Nix is awful. And we've seen Bo Nix be that this year. I mean, we've seen him in some games miss open receivers, and I think that's what it's going to take for Alabama to have a chance, because I just don't see Alabama's offense generating a lot.
Well, that was my next question, is how bad is Alabama's D?
And they're obviously not as good as they have been under Saban almost every other year. You know, they still, by the metrics, are a top 10 defense. As hard as that is for people to believe,
is very surprising.
They've done a pretty good job at really shutting down bad offenses. And Auburn sometimes is a bad offense. The question is, can Alabama stop Auburn's running game? Because if they can, and you're relying on Nix to throw balls on target, he hasn't done that very consistently this year. And it could be a situation where it's a low-scoring game. In fact, I would expect it to be low-scoring. I don't know what the total is, but this seems to me unlikely to get into the 40s. I've got to believe the total's at least there. So I don't know. I guess I would kind of lean toward it being lower scoring first, but even if Alabama wins, I see it being maybe a field goal. Certainly not a last-second field goal, because an Alabama kicker is not going to make a big kick. We know that. But I could see Alabama holding on to win by about three, but winning by more than that, it seems like a real stretch to me.
If I told you the over-under is 50?
I would say you should be able to win that under with a good bit of cushion.
Yeah.
Like I said, unless Mac Jones, they do.
And that, the wide receiver core is amazing.
The parallel a lot of people are drawing is 5 years ago when Cardale Jones came in for JT Barrett for Ohio State, and the question was, what's he going to do? And that was the Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin. Of course, they end up winning 59-0. That is not going to happen. No one is scoring close to 59 points against Auburn. So take that one off the table. But there is still a possibility that, hey, maybe Mac Jones looks better than we've ever seen him look. And if he's hitting guys in stride, they're going to make plays. You know, if he's not making bad mistakes when he's under pressure, maybe they can score a lot. But having never seen him do that, look, he had some throws last week against Western Carolina that resulted in big plays that were underthrown, where a good defense, where the coverage was there, ball might have been intercepted, at the very least would have been knocked down. And so he's going to have to be better than he's ever been in his career, and he's going to have to do it against by far the best defense he's ever faced in order for Alabama to score. I don't think Alabama could score 28 in this game without him playing.
The team total's 27.
Right. Without him playing incredibly well, I don't see how they even get to 28.
Team total's 27. I'm looking at the first half under, too. I like first half unders when these quarterbacks are suspect, so both coaches kind of want to play conservative, and then maybe they're down 10 late third, have to press a little bit. So I typically like first half unders.
The one thing with Alabama, if you're talking unders, they do have an elite punt returner. He took one to the house against LSU.
That was what I was going to bring up. The first half under should have hit with LSU, but the end of the first quarter, I believe it was, he housed it.
He housed it, and then you had that bizarre series of events that took place in the final minute of the first half that led to
that was also the defense, like LSU's defense being bad and LSU's offense carving up a you know, suspect.
Right. I mean, like, Auburn's not going to leave receivers running wide open.
But by comparison, that first half total was 31.5. This is going to be like 25-ish.
Yeah, I mean, considering
the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, look, you went from Tua versus Joe Burrow,
right,
and now it's Mac Jones versus Bo Nix, and the total's not that much higher.
Well, and we learned that total should have been a lot higher, but yeah.
Well, right, right.
Okay, so good stuff there. I've been leading Auburn. I've been fading. Like, I just don't believe in Mac Jones. Like, I mean, he's.
I don't believe in him until I see it.
Right.
I've got to see him look like a legit SEC starting quarterback.
Does A&M have any chance to knock off LSU?
I don't think
at
so.
Death Valley, because A&M's been kind of dismissed all year, but they've had such a tough schedule.
So last week, A&M, this is the first time all year that they actually hung in the game with a good team. Now, what's concerning? Now, look, the LSU defense is more like the Alabama defense, right? The three best defenses they played, Clemson, Auburn, Georgia, they didn't score a touchdown in the first three quarters of any of those games. They made a little bit of noise in the fourth quarter of all three of them, probably made the score look closer. Now, to be fair to A&M, they had the ball with the chance to take the lead in the fourth quarter against Georgia. So it wasn't like that wasn't one of those you could say, well, scores, you know, looked closer than the game really was. No,
right.
A&M was in that game. But it's the first time against a really good team this year that they have been in the game in the fourth quarter and not just tacking on meaningless scores late. Although I guess on this podcast, what I would call meaningless scores aren't always meaningless.
No, that's
so. I need to recognize that. But at the same time, just because you did it against a Georgia team that was really shaky offensively doesn't mean that you're going to do it against LSU. And I don't have a lot of confidence in A&M's offense. I think for all the credit that Jimbo gets as a great offensive mind, I just don't see it out of most of his teams. Since Jameis Winston left his team at Florida State, I don't know if I've seen it, you know, on a consistent basis out of any of his offenses.
Yeah, I mean, we see it with Sumlin, right? Like, we gave him all this praise. Well, he had Mike Evans, too, and Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
Right, so it wasn't just Manziel.
So anyway, I think this is a game where if you just go back to what Alabama did against this A&M defense, LSU, home finale, I think they score close to 50.
Really?
I do.
Their team total is about 39-ish.
Oh, yeah. To me, that's easy.
All day?
You make me commit to it? No, I don't see A&M slowing down this offense. And look, LSU kind of sleptwalked last Saturday.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that 2 weeks in a row at home. I think they lay it on A&M, and A&M will score a little bit because everyone scores a little bit on LSU, but I don't think this game's all that close.
We forget, and you and I have talked a lot over the last couple of years, especially on radio, is once these teams sort of see that light at the end of the tunnel, they kind of reach that final. It's, you know, like we haven't seen any upsets in the conference title games during the college football playoff era. Like chalk is held except for like the 1 or 2 point spreads. It's anytime there's like a 7 point spread or higher, they just all like kind of like reach that groove. I can see LSU kind of running through the tape here, if you will.
Yeah, that's what I expect them to do. Like I said, they started really slow last week against Arkansas. I know they really put it on them in the second and third quarters. But I would expect them to be much more engaged in this game from the opening kickoff than they were last Saturday.
Okay, good stuff there. And let's go to the Egg Bowl. And I'm on the dog. You kind of like Michigan to win this game, too? I'm sorry, Michigan. I was looking at Western Michigan tonight. You kind of like Ole Miss here?
I do like Ole Miss.
Who's playing quarterback?
I would assume it's Plumlee.
Plumlee? Okay,
yeah,
good.
I mean, they'll play both of them.
Why?
I don't know. But, well, I do know why. I mean, the reason is because Plumlee is not a great passer, but it's funny. I was looking and I don't want to lose people here with expected points added because they probably don't know a whole lot about that metric. You might have a few that do, but what it does, it takes groups of plays and it looks at the impact that those plays have on the scoring margin. And if you look at when Plumlee is on the field, Ole Miss is a less than average passing offense, but they are a great rushing offense. When he's off the field, they are an okay passing offense, but not a good rushing offense. And the difference, though, it all comes out in the wash as them being much better when Plumlee's on the field than when he's not. That's the important thing. They don't throw the ball as well. Yeah, exactly. But they will run up and down the field. And Mississippi State, look, I know they're playing for bowl eligibility here. Ole Miss technically isn't playing for anything, but it is the rivalry.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal here. And I feel like Ole Miss is just flat out playing better over the last 6 weeks than Mississippi State is.
Hands down.
And look, Mississippi State, how excited are they about being 6-6 and going to whatever bowl. I'm not going to insult whatever bowl because it's on our air, but
it's a rivalry for them though tonight.
Yeah, it is. Thursday. It is, but Ole Miss is just, I think they're playing better on both sides of the ball right now.
I like this Rebel squad. To your point, they've been playing a lot better. What do your numbers have for Michigan, Ohio State? Because we both liked Ohio State last week. The box score was certainly what we predicted. It just didn't translate that
so
way on the field.
When you ask what the numbers say, it really depends on whether you're doing it over the entirety of the season or whether you're trying to get more recent. Because since October 1st, Michigan has been one of the best teams in the country.
I kind of like Michigan.
You know, and so I was just looking at that number and I saw it's 9, 9.5, somewhere in that range. And I was thinking to myself, well, look, what I'm seeing out of Michigan right now is what I expected to see before the season started. This is the Michigan that I was picking to beat Ohio State and to win the Big Ten. So if they're playing like that team, why would I not feel pretty confident that they can come within 9?
Because we've been clobbered every year in this game.
That's a great answer.
That's why I'm only like, I kind of like Michigan because I've been down this road, fool me once, shame on me.
Right? The other side of it is this Ohio State team has been better than any of the previous Ohio State teams. That's another reason to not trust Michigan in this spot. I mean, look, they finally did get challenged in the second half last week against Penn State, but it wasn't because of something that Michigan could replicate. It was because of fumbles. You know, Michigan's not going to strategize to make Ohio State go out and fumble again. Like, they can't do that. So it wasn't like Penn State exposed some sort of weakness that Michigan can exploit. If that had been the case, I'd be more confident in Michigan. I do think that, like Penn State, they're very capable of getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and I think they're better in the secondary, than Penn State. The question is, can they force Ohio State into obvious passing situations? Because Penn State couldn't. They couldn't stop that running game. And if Ohio State runs the ball that way against Michigan, this game won't be close. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, the big playability of either team. I mean, I know it's master of the obvious, but when you can get these 40-yard chunk plays, and obviously the Buckeyes have the speed at the wide receiver position, Wolverines can, but Shea Patterson turns it over so much. I don't know if I trust Patterson with the pass rush.
He's been a lot better since the first month of the season.
I know.
He was dreadful with the turnovers in the first month. Do you think Don Brown decides to play Ohio State's passing game a little bit different than he did last year? I realize it's a different type of offense.
The zone underneath stuff.
But man, did those guys get torched last year. So I'm sure he'll take a different approach. But you know what? If you want to look at the kind of the psychological side of this game, and I'm not ignoring the rivalry. I know I've been saying a lot of things throughout this whole conversation where I'm kind of just zeroing in on certain aspects of the game and taking the rivalry out of it. And obviously that's a big deal in a game like this too. But Ohio State, from a playoff standpoint, doesn't have to win. As long as they win the Big Ten championship next week, they're in the playoff. No question they are in the playoff if they win next week. Now, it doesn't make it a meaningless game. Not only because the rivalry factor, but because of the importance of being the number one seed. They're playing for seeding here. This is for a shot at the number one seed. That's what's riding on this game. But I do think that there's maybe, if they get down in the second half, not quite the same sense of urgency that, like, guys, our season is over if we don't come back and win this game. Like, all right, we'll get them next week. You know, now look, I they're not going to do that in the Michigan game.
No, they want this game. Would you lay 22 with Michigan State against Maryland?
Maryland is so bad. I mean, Michigan State's come unraveled and all that. But,
they won last week. They need this game for bowl eligibility.
Yeah. I mean, at this stage, I'm not sure that Maryland is better than Rutgers. They obviously were about a month ago when they played each other by a significant amount. But, man,
it's in East Lansing, too.
Last week for Maryland, I mean, that was brutally bad.
Pretty bad. What about, would you lay 9.5 with Illinois at home against Northwestern? I've been on the fight
two
in the line.
Scores with Illinois?
Probably five times this year.
I like this team. And
yeah,
you know
I
what?
Clearly do.
Yeah, you know, I've heard a number of times in the last month.
They have speed. That's my thing. They have a lot of speed at the important positions.
You know, there have been a number of times in the last month where people have, you know, called Illinois a square dog. And I've kind of thought, like, look, until they don't do it, like, this is one of those where they're on a streak. They're on a roll. Like, just keep riding them. And even though they didn't win the game last week, they still were competitive. They kept it close against Iowa. So, This is just different, though, because they're a favorite. And it is a rivalry. I know
2-2 is a favorite this
people
year.
People don't put this up there with you know, other in-state rivalries in college football, but it is a rivalry.
Okay.
So, look, Northwestern did fight last week. And
yeah, they did.
You know, they weren't as bad as they had been in several other conference games before it.
It's a pass.
I don't know, man.
I think it's a pass.
I think it's a pass. I would say it's a pass.
Tennessee, speaking of in-state rivalries, Tennessee laying 22 to Vandy.
Boy, that...
They're pitiful.
It seems big, but I think it's a pass. Because Tennessee has been playing so much better, and they've been beating up on bad teams, but how many teams have they blown out?
I think Vandy
out?
Qualifies, too, as a bad team.
Oh, no, they definitely do, but how many teams has Tennessee blown out? I'm just trying to remember in the last... month or so. I mean, since the Alabama game, that was when they started this run after
they blew
Alabama.
They blew out UAB and South Carolina by 20.
Okay. And South Carolina should be a little bit better than Vandy. So, I mean, it's certainly possible. I definitely wouldn't side with Vandy here.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, I mean.
Florida State.
Believe it or not, Tennessee has payback in order because Vandy has owned this rivalry of
late. Yeah. No, that's the only side I would take. Florida State, 17.5.
I'd kind of lean toward the Gators. You know, I know that that Florida State showed a pulse up at BC a couple of weeks ago, and we were wondering what they were going to do, you know, coming off the Willie Taggart stuff. But this is in the swamp. Florida is playing well. You know, I've tried to be skeptical of Florida over the last, you know, couple of months, and like, you know, and sure, they didn't play as well as I thought they would against Georgia, even though they still came within one score when it was all said and done. But they're a much improved team, and I think against a team that doesn't have a lot going for it in Florida State. I mean, they've got some talent, but just as far as just anything particular in their game that you can point to and say, Florida State's really good at this. They give Florida a hard time there. There's nothing I see that falls into that category that I think that
off a bye
Florida would have difficulty with against Florida State. So home game, I can see Florida really putting one on them.
I think perhaps the most interesting handicap of the weekend, again, about the handicap, the Civil War. You have Oregon State that had the game won, was going bowling, blows it. And then you have Oregon, which is thinking college football playoff, loses at ASU. So you have two teams, demoralizing losses, okay? Rivalry game, so it's like the up and down, the emotional swing. And then I kind of like Oregon State.
Well, so to the point you just made, bowl eligibility, Oregon State still needs this
game. That's my point.
Oregon doesn't. They've won the division. They're obviously out of the playoff race. This is a rivalry that I don't think means nearly as much to Oregon as it does to Oregon State because they dominate.
Because Oregon has the Washington rivalry that matters more, right.
And about with Oregon, it's more about conference superiority. It's not about being the best team in the state. I mean, that's just a given every year. So they don't take Oregon State all that seriously.
But you saw what happened the last 7 minutes of that game.
Oh, it's like once
Oregon's
they decide,
ceiling is like, all right, boom, bang, yeah.
And so I don't know whether that was Arizona State changing something they were doing defensively or whether Oregon just woke up and like, guys, we need to score. Sense of urgency and all of a sudden, bang, bang, bang. But yeah, I mean, it's like, where was that Oregon offense for the first three quarters?
Kirk Herbstreit articulated what I've been trying to articulate all year, and it's because I have a couple of close buddies who are really good NFL kind of connoisseurs and scouts and things like that. It's Herbert, when pressured, can be very skittish and a horrendous decision maker. And we saw some just it wasn't like it was deep throws on the sideline, underthrowing the DB made a nice play. It was like literally a linebacker right there and he throws him and hits him in the numbers. It's like, what is this? So Herbert has just been shaky. He has all the measurables. Big arm, and he made some great throws 2 weeks ago against Arizona. Like they literally
Some great throws last week, but he also made some really bad throws.
So I just don't trust Oregon State's defense to make those plays because they're just so bad. And the offense is actually top 25 offensive efficiency.
So
I think am I
you're
is
saying
that right? Yeah,
track meet. I haven't looked at it, but that wouldn't shock me. I mean, they've been pretty. I mean, except for the Utah game, they've been pretty good offensively for most of the season.
Right.
So. Maybe it's more of a track meet. I don't know. Old-fashioned Civil War.
Yeah.
Up and down the field. But, I have a... What's Oregon State getting?
19.5 in Eugene.
It, it, It seems like a lot for a team that just had its playoff bubble burst.
Right.
And so, doesn't need to win the game for any reason. Obviously the secondary goal, the fallback goal here for Oregon is win the Pac-12.
Which they still can. With a loss.
which they still can even with a loss in this game. That's next week that they play for that. So it does feel like a lot of points when you start to put all the pieces together.
This is like one of my favorite things to do is fade a team off the big loss. You know, I took Indiana plus the points against Penn State after Penn State lost to Minnesota. Yep. Doesn't always work. Some teams just, they get there nonetheless. Notre Dame, I think, is the play as well at the farm.
Notre Dame has impressed me the past 2 weeks with how they have just gone out and taken care of business against an inferior team in a spot where they really, I mean, all they're still playing for is a New Year's Six bowl berth. And I know to some people they'd say, well, that's a lot. If you were in the playoff last year, it's harder to get excited about just playing in a big bowl that's not well for said. The championship, well you know? And so I give them a lot of credit for just keeping that intensity and playing up to their potential, not playing down to the opponent. And having not done that the last 2 weeks, I don't know why they would do it here. Stanford is a total mess. Stanford just lost to Cal. So
and that's
look,
their big rivalry.
And, look, and I realize this is a rivalry, too, for Stanford to a certain extent. But after losing to Cal, I mean, what is Stanford kind of rallying around here? I don't know. I think it's a game where it's tough to find the motivation for either team, but I trust Notre Dame a lot more to show up. And if Notre Dame plays to its potential, even if Stanford plays to its own, Stanford's own potential, given who they have on the field with injuries and all that stuff, is way below Notre Dame's potential. So I think this is just a question of does Notre Dame show up and play? And I think they will.
They have such big playability compared to Stanford's big playability.
And Stanford's banged up in the secondary, and we've seen that, you know, we've seen it play out in games recently. I think Notre Dame wins easily.
Okay, my man. Look, always love chatting hoops, or excuse me, football.
We can chat hoops too sometime. I don't watch hoops, but if you want to chat
a lot in the newsroom, it's good to do it on air here on the podcast. You have yourself a very happy Thanksgiving.
You as well.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
That is a fact, and hopefully after talking to both Brad and John, we will have that sort of wisdom. And Taylor, you know, during the podcast, especially with Murray, I was like, I don't like a lot of plays, but now that I've talked to Brad and got to flush it out, I might have a lot of plays this week.
I would say take an extra careful look at that Michigan State -21. I think it's -22 now.
Uh-huh.
My Terps are the worst team in college football, and I bet against them every week.
Yes, yeah, they're not. I faded them hard in the snake pit a couple times. Not a lot of home field advantage there. Now here they're on the road. So I'm looking at that one. I think I'm at 57% in the ESPN chalk column. Went 4-2 last week, so got there with the backdoor cover of Tulane that Paul Stone was shared. And so I was thinking about taking it easy, not liking the card that much, kind of finishing strong. But there's a few plays, after talking to Brad especially, that really sort of piqued my interest. So we'll see what translates to the ESPN chalk column, which will go up Wednesday. Will go up Thursday. My picks are due tomorrow. But obviously you heard us talk about a lot of plays. So you like to lay the points with Sparty, going for that bowl eligibility and that tough defense.
Oh yeah, home too. Terps got nothing to play for. Guys are quitting the team right now. There was a DUI arrest on Saturday night, so it's a full on dumpster fire.
Fading the alma mater. Sometimes they always say, "Oh, don't bet the teams your favorite teams." I actually think I always bet like Laker games because you know your team's better.
I always bet against the teams I like, never for them.
Why never for?
Because I don't. It's doubly painful if they lose. Then
so the emotional hedge.
Yes, of course.
Okay. All right. All right, well, thanks to everyone, and we wish you a happy Thanksgiving. We'll also have an NFL pod coming out as well. And just thanks to everyone, and safe travels as well for those that are hitting the road this holiday weekend.